Bordeaux has already logged more days above 40 degrees Celsius in 2026 than it did from 1920 through 2025. Welcome to Debug the Hype. I'm Alex Morgan, and this show is not affiliated with Reddit or any subreddit. Content today is curated from online communities. It's August 1st, 2026. That heat spike is part of a summer that's been bending records across Western Europe and helps explain why some of the other stories today are suddenly more urgent. Bordeaux and much of Western France have seen temperatures smash historical marks. The city briefly hit about 41.9 degrees Celsius, and according to Meteo France, a national thermal indicator nudged 30 degrees Celsius, the highest on record for mainland France. The heat has strained power grids, sparked wildfires, closed schools, and has been linked to dozens of heat-related deaths and drownings. Watch the season as a test of how fast infrastructure and public health systems must adapt. Long-term U.S. borrowing costs jumped too. The 30-year Treasury yield climbed to roughly 5.27%, a near two-decade high, as markets price in higher-for-longer interest rate outlook. That move raises mortgage rates, lifts corporate borrowing costs, and reshapes retirement returns. If you're in the market for a home or refinancing, expect sticker shock to stick around. At least 49,000 people reportedly crossed from Morocco into the Spanish enclave of Ceuta in roughly 24 hours, in an event Spanish officials called chaotic and which left dozens dead. Madrid says about 25,000 later returned voluntarily, but images and accounts suggest overwhelmed local services and a politically explosive moment for Spain-Morocco relations. This one looks likely to reshape EU migration talks and bilateral diplomacy in the weeks ahead. Iran's campaign in the Gulf just stepped up in two alarming ways that matter for shipping, markets, and the cloud-dependent economy.
First, Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps says it struck and halted two oil tankers that were transiting the Strait of Hormuz under U.S. aerial escort and forced four others to change course. Those are Iran's words. U.S. and Western officials dispute some elements of the account, and reporting remains contested. Still, the practical result is unmistakable. Shipping through Hormuz has largely stopped in recent days, and Brent crude has pushed above $90 a barrel. That's not an abstract figure. The Strait of Hormuz channels roughly one-fifth of the world's seaborne oil, so any sustained restriction has immediate ripple effects on pump prices and inflation. On the diplomatic side, President Joe Biden's successor convened a cabinet meeting at Camp David to map a way forward, and the White House press secretary described the session, colorfully, as a lot of fun, underscoring how political optics are now entangled with military decisions. Why this matters beyond headlines. Naval incidents in choke points are high-leverage events. They test rules about which routes are lawful, who can protect commercial traffic, and how far escorts may go to deter or defend. The IRGC framed these moves as enforcement of its own maritime law. Non-compliant oil tankers were struck, while the U.S. and partners argue for freedom of navigation and safe transit. That mismatch is a classic escalation ladder. Each side can interpret the other's routine actions as provocation, and each tactical response, jamming, interdiction, shootdowns, escorts, sanctions, expands the political and operational stakes.
There are three immediate knock-on effects to watch. First, markets. Higher crude pushes inflation up, and that compounds domestic political pressure on leaders who already face voters worried about prices. Second, military posture. The U.S. may be pressured to alter escort rules, allocate more naval assets to the region, or lean on partners for de-escalation. All expensive, all risky. Third, the information war. Both Tehran and Washington are using public claims and images to justify the next moves, and misreads in that environment are dangerous. Reddit threads reflecting this story were full of skepticism. Many commenters questioned the accuracy of official accounts and warned that a single misinterpreted move could spiral into much broader conflict. That skepticism matters. When publics doubt their governments, political momentum for rapid action or restraint can flip unpredictably. That naval picture is only half the escalation. The second development is digital. New satellite imagery shows damage to commercial cloud infrastructure in the Gulf, and Iranian forces openly claimed strikes on data centers. Analysts used Copernicus Sentinel-2 imagery to verify damage to sites in Bahrain, and the IRGC said it destroyed Amazon data centers there. Amazon's regional status dashboard hasn't reported those services reliably since late April, and the company advised customers to migrate workloads to other regions. Independent verification is still being hashed out. Imagery can show patterns that look like fires or structural damage, but assessing operational impact requires on-the-ground or provider confirmation. Even with that caveat, the signal is clear. Critical commercial infrastructure is being pulled into kinetic conflict.
Why targeting data centers changes the math. Energy infrastructure, tankers and refineries, is a classic military target because it hurts an adversary's economy. Striking shared cloud facilities does something different. It threatens the digital systems that companies, governments, and even militaries rely on for payments, communications, and logistics. The economic fallout is more diffuse, but also potentially more disruptive for civilians and businesses. For example, if a major cloud region becomes unreliable, multinational firms scramble to fail over services, latency spikes, and local economies that depended on cloud-hosted apps can see sudden outages. Insurers, too, will recalibrate whether they cover commerce in a recognized conflict zone, and that changes investment decisions about where to locate backups and redundancy. There's also a geopolitical domino. Attacks on data centers push private companies into geopolitical choices they'd prefer to avoid: move workloads, disclose outages, or accept higher risk. Some cloud customers are already being asked to shift operations to safer regions at cost and delay. On the intelligence side, commercial satellite imagery has been a crucial independent verification tool for journalists and analysts. If state actors or private companies start blocking or contesting that imagery, public accountability and timely verification will become harder. Reddit commenters noted another practical vulnerability. Many businesses concentrate servers in a handful of coastal data hubs for cost efficiency. That concentration now looks like a strategic vulnerability, not a purely economic decision.
Put together, the two developments create an ugly feedback loop. Attacks that disrupt oil flows push prices higher, which increases inflationary pressure and the likelihood of defensive measures in the Gulf. At the same time, attacks on cloud infrastructure threaten commerce and civilian digital services, forcing companies and countries to respond in ways that may be interpreted as escalation. That raises a central policy question for Western governments. Respond with stepped-up military protections for shipping lanes and commercial assets, risking more kinetic encounters, or double down on diplomacy, sanctions, and cyber resilience while accepting continued disruption to trade and services? There are practical steps governments and firms will likely take next. Militarily, expect more escort missions, pre-positioned naval assets, and a focused diplomatic push to open agreed safe corridors, though those are politically fraught and costly. Economically, energy buyers will try to reroute tankers around longer, safer passages, driving freight costs up and shipping times longer. Corporates will accelerate plans to diversify cloud regions and to harden architecture against sudden regional outages. Expect more explicit language in service level agreements about force majeure and conflict-related exclusions. Finally, expect a legal and normative fight over whether state actors can be held accountable for deliberate attacks on commercial infrastructure. That discussion will matter for post-conflict liability and for how future investors price risk. Before we leave this thread, two brief caveats. First, much of what's circulating is contested or sourced to state claims, IRGC statements, satellite imagery, provider notices. So treat specifics cautiously until corporate or independent on-site confirmation arrives. Second, escalation risk is not inevitable. Diplomacy, back channels, and third-party mediation can still de-escalate, but only if both sides see a credible off-ramp. For markets and logistics planners, the safe assumption is contingency. Expect disrupted flows, higher insurance costs, and the need for both energy and digital redundancy. A final Reddit-sourced color on the deep dive, a lot of commentators argued this should force Europe and the US to stop outsourcing resilience to single routes and single clouds. Whether that becomes policy or a series of private sector shifts will depend on how long these disruptions last and whether insurers and investors demand higher resilience standards. If oil lanes and cloud servers can be targeted together, governments and companies will have to decide whether resilience means more military protection or more costly redundancy. And whoever pays for that will be voters and customers. I'm Alex Morgan from Debug the Hype.